Well, we're off to see the Saver.
I was going to say it's Thursday night and our Saver's half over now.
We have done, this is the first time that we have done all the stuff that we were going to have to do in advance. Preparing
the recording the bumpers. Right. Getting the mix down or the multi-track files ready. Doing the notes for the RSS feed. Doing the Saver display page. Mm-hmm. All done.
All done. All ready to
Took us 3 hours.
Sounds about right. It's about what it took last time. So, the last time we did it, we started at like 10 o'clock at night.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's 6 man-hours of work just to prepare that crap. Yeah.
So the question is, when we get there and we have the stuff and you get the, well, the internet's probably going to suck at the hotel, so you probably won't be able to upload them directly to a server there, right?
No, it wasn't too bad the last time I tried, and I got this.
Oh, Jeff's is a Verizon thing.
There was a quota on it, but
Files aren't going to be that big.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be, it might be close to a gigabyte when it's all said and done. Mm-hmm. And it's only a 2 gig thing on the, you know, monthly, 2 gig monthly quota on that. So, but the internet in the lobby is free, and it was pretty good. I think I uploaded stuff the last time I was there.
Yeah, so we should be able to perhaps even throw them up on the day after, but I don't know. We'll see.
We could potentially get Friday's stuff up before Saturday's salons.
Depends on what we do Friday. Well, actually, no, Friday morning.
Depends what we do Saturday morning.
Yeah, Saturday morning, yeah.
Find some good brunch somewhere. It's going to be hard to beat America's Eats Tavern. Yeah, so it's reopening. They're moving it to, it's over in Virginia now. It's at it's a Falls Church or something like that. It's not open yet. It's going to be in the Ritz-Carlton or something like that. I was like, oh, if it was open, maybe we'll go there. But like, oh, come on, there's so much good stuff to do.
There's much better.
But that was, I haven't had a meal that good since, I don't think.
I know, that was an amazing sort of gastronomical event that we were able to take part in. We can ask around. I'm sure people will know.
Yeah.
Good places. We do have a plan to do the traditional steak tartare. That should be fun.
Yeah, Brasserie Beck's so close to the hotel. How can you not, right? Mm.
And, it should be fun. I'm looking forward to, we're really looking forward to it. It'll be, here we go again. I don't know. There's not much to say about it. I mean,
how many years is this now?
This is the seventh year.
Seven. Really? We were young pups out of the first one, huh?
Yeah. I mean, the show is only about 3 years old, if that, and, I think it was because, right, we got invited because you recorded stuff from the GABF.
No, I think it was a different way around. I think we just...
Did we ask?
Or
we
just remember the first one, we sat up front. Remember they had like the, for the one salon, it was like VIP media up front, you know, we sat in the front row.
No, you're thinking of GABF.
No, this was Saver. This was at the...
Oh,
is it the other place? Remember, and they had the one salon
room? But we still and got we sat to record off of their...
We did, but we weren't recording. We were recording on our own that year.
Right, yeah.
And I remember sitting next to Bill Brand. He's the guy that, you know, died outside the 21st Amendment, got hit by the train, right? We were sitting right beside Bill Brand, and you know, the first Saver... Did a shitload of interviews.
Yeah. We covered that well. And here we are again.
Yeah, the rest is history, I guess you could say, huh?
They keep getting they keep getting better. I mean, that's the thing that I've noticed about Saver. The last years was going to be hard to beat because New York was an amazing location and it was really well run. Every aspect was really well run.
Yeah, I mean, the only problem with the location was there was the two rooms in the narrow corridor between the rooms, right?
Yes.
It would have been much better if they didn't have that narrow corridor choke point, right?
Right.
But other than that, the salons upstairs were in great venues. The roof was low in the one room too. And when you have a lot of people, a low roof kind of makes it loud, makes it hot. But the choke point was really the biggest. It's hard to get from one side to the other.
Especially when things
were especially when the oysters were over there and you're over here.
Yeah, I know. But the food was great. The people running the audio were fantastic.
Yeah, that one dude, he went out of his way. He pulled out his own little mobile compressor and hooked us in. Well, we're not going to sound that good this year.
Yeah, that's the unfortunate thing. Is that we're dealing with probably less.
I mean, our sound's going to be good enough, right? It doesn't. There's no incentive for us to spend the money on, you know, three
compressors
for that. You know, it sounds good enough. You know, if someone wanted to, you know, like give us money in addition just to cover that, you know, we'd do it. But take it out of our take home doesn't make any sense.
But yeah, I think for the second year on, we got hotels from Brewer Association, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's really screws any kind of journalistic integrity that we pretend we have. But
well, I mean, no, because our journalistic integrity is not towards the Brewers Association; it's towards the beers and the brewers themselves, and they're not paying for us. It's the Brewers Association. Right. So I feel like.
But that's, they're kind of one and the same, right? It's the trade to promote small brewers. They just don't really, you know, like they're playing favorites to any particular beer, but they're playing favorites to craft beer. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say. I mean,
I feel it's enough of a line of demarcation that we can say, look, you know, they're supporting us in a way to get the word out, and that's what we've been doing anyway. They're not asking us, and they've never asked us to give a good review to a particular
brewer. No, they've never done that, right?
And that's really where our journalistic integrity comes in, right?
I mean, I think there could be a little bit of a conflict, right? I mean, I don't agree with these breweries that make craft beer that aren't craft brewers. I don't think you would either.
No, and we've brought up the. I mean, one of the big things in Saver 4 was I was talking to a bunch of brewers about the small brewers tax differential.
Well, there's that.
And that was something that I was kind of, you know, I had a different opinion on than the Brewers Association. So,
well, then, but you know, like there was a story in the Financial Times about Widmer Brothers, right? Mm-hmm. And it was a scathing piece against the board of the Brewers Association and Jim Cook and how they voted to do that whole 30%, you know, that majority owned or whatnot type thing, which makes Goose Island and Widmer not count as craft brewers.
Right.
I just noticed, I don't know, about a month ago, I thought when Boulevard was bought by Duvel Morgat that it was no longer being a craft brewer. But they somehow spun it to Duvel USA, and Omegang is a craft brewery again, and Boulevard stayed a craft brewery. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That's kind of shady. They're just, you know, playing games with.
Well, then maybe we should ask the ownerships. Question.
I mean, okay, so you know, Duvel Morgat spun off a company or something, and in such a way that the Brewers Association recognizes it as an American company.
Right.
It's still Duvel. I mean,
yeah. It's one of those weird though. It's one of those weird accounting things that I don't know. I mean, this thing is one thing that we don't do, and maybe we should, but it's really not the focus of our show, is we don't cover the business of craft beer nearly that much. We cover the beers themselves, and we cover, you know, some things about the breweries, what the breweries are releasing. We don't cover the actual business of it. Maybe that's sort of outside of our purview. But that would be something for a more business-related podcast to go into.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that would take actual research and preparation.
Yes. And knowledge. I mean,
it could be a good podcast, right? The, you know, craft beer business daily or something, you know, and that kind of thing. Not daily, but weekly.
I mean, I'm wondering how long you could sustain that.
I think there's a lot, but I mean, it's the kind of thing where you would have to have some researchers, some journalists, some people making stories, right? It's not just parroting what you see on beernews.org.
Right.
You know, you would actually have to figure it out. You have to find the stories. You know, it'd be like Marketplace, but for just beer, you know, that kind of thing. I think that'd be a good podcast, but it's definitely beyond my resources to pretend to do anything like that.
Yeah. We have enough doing this thing, so.
Doing the easy way. Doing it easily is still hard.
I don't think it's the easy way. I mean, we put effort into the show.
We put effort into the show. It's a far cry from the effort I used to put into the show. And it's a different show. It has to be a different show because my life has changed. It's a different show,
and there's also the fact that we, you know, once you get good at something, you don't need to put as much effort into it. I mean,
yeah. I don't know. I think the show. I like the old show. I like the old show that, you know, I could prep stuff, have notes, have kind of a script, you know, an itinerary to go through with news and, I don't know, what beer am I, and listener emails.
I thought that stuff was interesting and experimental, but I think that the show we have now is much more, it's much more fits in with the general podcast audience. They're looking for a loose show. They're not looking for a tight show, for the most part. They're looking for, you know, something that feels off the cuff and real. And that's what we've been doing.
Well, I mean, it was always off the cuff and real. We just had...
We had an order of things that we were doing things in. We had very particular notes and things that we
read. We still have an order we do things in. We drink two beers, we do a commercial, we drink two more beers, and we do rankings. That's still an order.
Okay, it's a loose order. I think the show that we have now is a lot better than the show that we used to do. But I think that's just because we learned how to make the show.
Well, I think we're better at doing shows. Yeah. But I think if we were still able to prep a show like we used to prep a show, I think it'd be a really good show. But no one has the time to do such work. I used to spend 40 hours a week working on the show. So, I mean, that's way different from what I do now, which is how we prep for the show is we don't talk to each other.
Yeah, that's essentially it. I mean, we may toss a message back and forth, but we try not to talk to each other so that we have stuff to talk about on these sort of shows and with pre and posts. And you know, the day of, we look up data that we can find about the beers and use that.
Yeah.
It's easier now, right? I mean, you used to have to call the brewer sometimes to get information.
Email them, kind of thing. There's a lot more information available online, so the amount of time I spent collecting the data would probably be less now. Yeah, I'm not saying I still want to do What Beer Am I, right?
Right.
I'm just saying I liked having segments. I liked having prepared segments.
If you want to come up with something.
I'm not saying I want to. I'm not saying I can. I'm just saying I liked it, right? Mm-hmm. Show's a different show now. For me, out of necessity. You know, ever since Allison was born, the show has taken on a very different sound and feel.
Right.
And that's when we started doing live to tape instead of tightly edited. That's when we started doing, you know, things like that. We had to learn to do. If we couldn't have learned to do live to tape, the show probably would have ended.
Probably. Because there was a time when it was very sporadic when things were getting put out.
Mm-hmm.
So. But we had enough going for us that enough back experience we could do the live to tape.
So here's something I was thinking about the other day. It's been 9 fucking years, right? Where's the show going? Like, how's it going to end?
It's one of us going to die.
I mean, do you think it'll actually go that long? I mean, how do you think, what are the probabilities? What's the likelihood of the show? How's the show going to end?
One of us is going to move out of town. That's how the show's going to end.
Probably, yeah.
That's the most likely way the show ends.
But then what?
Well, then...
Do I keep doing the show, or do you keep doing... you wouldn't do the show by yourself.
No.
I might. I don't know what I would do. Maybe I would just end it, you know?
I mean, there was
a time I think I would probably just end it and maybe do something else.
I think that would be...
It'd probably be the way to do it.
Yeah. I, you know, then we could have something where I would come to town and we would do a Crafty Radio special or
something like that. It's like the semi-annual Dharma Sons Thanksgiving show that they still do, right?
Okay.
Yeah, because Rob and, you know, those guys are back together, and I don't know if they do it every year. I'm not sure if they, I think they did it last year, but, you know, Thanksgiving, they'll do a Dharma Sons show. So it'd be kind of like that.
Yeah.
Everyone listening doesn't know who the Dharma Sons is, but it's a band of a guy that we used to work with.
Right. And they're just a typical kind of lazy rock band.
Yeah, lazy rock would call be good. Lazy rock with a fair poppy influence to it.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty catchy music.
It was how I knew the word Dharma before Lost.
You didn't watch Dharma and Greg?
I guess that was, but that came even after, that came after the Rob and the Dharma Sons, so yeah.
Pretty close in time, I'm not sure.
Well, let's look it up. We have this internet thing.
The internet knows when you met Rob?
Well, the internet knows when Dharma and Greg started, and right. It's after 1998.
Right.
Okay, so it was 1997 to 2002.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I knew of Dharma from Dharma and Greg then before I knew of the Dharma Sons. I definitely didn't know about the Dharma Bums. Was that Jack Kerouac or...
No,
it's a novel, right? I'm pretty sure that's where Rob got the name of the band. Dharma Bums. Who wrote that?
Dharma Bums. Yeah, Jack Kerouac. Yeah.
So that's the origin of Dharma Sons, I would have to think. I think I need another beer. What do you think?
Yeah, let's pull something out. Let's pull it out. And then spray it all over everybody.
I can't get my screen unlocked to pause the recording.
That's that old joke.
What's that? Rock out with your cock out?
No, how do you know that is a porn star at the gas station?
Okay.
When he's done filling it up, he pulls it out and sprays all over the car.
Aspirin? Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Full thing of aspirin.
I'll probably take the... So, a couple years ago when my uncle died, right? They cleaned out his place and he wasn't a drinker, so it wasn't, you know, like psoriasis of the liver, but he had some liver problems, so he was taking milk thistle, right? And I still got a jar and a half of GNC milk thistle capsules. And, you know, rumor has it, you know, that kind of stuff helps with metabolizing
it's
alcohol.
It's one of those things that we talked about before where you talked about how... when you were trying to conceive a boy,
right,
you did certain things, even though there's no real right. scientific data, but the opportunity cost is so low.
Why not?
Yeah, why not?
And since I got these milk thistle capsules for free, the opportunity cost is so low
yeah.
that when I'm going to GABF or Saver, I take them and pop the hell out of them.
The only thing that we would find is, you know, if they found that milk thistle was actually damaging, which is possible.
Possible, but not in normal... I mean, it is. Yeah. I guess it's still possible
yeah.
with the really long possible
yeah.
in normal things. But I'm like, let's try these new coasters to open these bottles.
Oh, okay, yeah, that's a good idea. So we got these coasters from.
I got these coasters. It's a great story for you here. These are from the Brooklyn Homebrew Shop. They sell their stuff at Giant Eagle, and I got these from a gift thing. Remember when I ordered Oberon and it turned out to be Noberon? Well, the guy from Giant Eagle, the owner of the Cranberry Store, got in touch with me. So I've been talking with him, but he got in touch with me on Twitter because he retweeted my tweet about how their prices are, growler fill prices are pretty insanely good. And he's like, good, I hope. I'm like, yeah, they're great when you get what you order. So then he had me email him the details, and I emailed him, and he's like, sorry about that. And he come to the service desk. I made you up a gift basket. It had an empty Giant Eagle growler. It had two free glasses that came from, you know, Schwag, and then these things and that box of chocolate pretzels that you ate last week. And a gift card, a very generous gift card, $35.
Not bad.
So I almost felt bad for, you know, getting $35. So I emailed him back. I'm like, you know, I've been in this podcast for 9 years, but not kind of a beer, craft beer expert. If you're interested, I would like to help, you know, educate or train your staff, you know, about craft beer or something like that. And so I met with him last Monday morning before work, and seems pretty open to it. So now I'm going to have to put together like an outline of what I think appropriate training would be. Great. It's not going to be tasting and things like that, right? He's not going to put that much effort into it. Mm-hmm. But I think, and also I'm not an expert in growler pouring,
right,
and tap line sanitation and stuff like that, right? So I can't do that. But I think it'll be about... I could talk to Hart. But what I think I'm going to focus on is, I mean, I already gave him some ideas. Like, they have, as you can imagine, their busiest time for the beer sales is after work, you know, rush hour, happy hour type stuff, right? So I mentioned him, and he had never thought of this. Like, why not have, like, a Cicerone? I mean, maybe not a certified Cicerone, but, you know, a beer expert, a Cicerone person, out in the cafe during your busiest time. And, you know, maybe not have him being all, like, shoppers don't like nebby people, like, hey, can I help you out type thing. But if you put him behind a counter, right, and stuff, you know, maybe that, or behind just a little podium, right, then people will understand what he's there for, right? He's a concierge type thing. He's like, oh, that's a good idea. So it's already started, right? But, you know, need to talk with, I mean, the entire staff there, they should be able to know similar beers, mm-hmm, and things like that. That's the thing, that's where I'm going to focus, right? Where they can strike up a conversation with a person and say, oh, you know, you like Magic Hat number 9.
Right.
It's an apricot wheat beer. We have these other fruited wheat beers. We have these other wheat beers. You know, you can try that kind of thing, you know, and kind of just give people ideas, right? I think, because actually, you know, I told the guy, I'm like, this was the beginning of the conversation Monday morning, was, you know, a lot of my friends are beer geeks, and they all have the same opinion about Giant Eagle, where the prices are really good, but the service sucks. And he kind of nodded. He kind of knew that he does. So the Giant Eagle and Cranberry is like a franchise, right? It's a family-owned Giant Eagle, and you know, they don't get very much beer support from corporate or anything like that.
Right.
Their dairy guy is the biggest beer geek employee that they have at the store, so he actually does the beer ordering. But he doesn't work in the cafe. But, I mean, he does a pretty good job beer ordering. And then
Giant Eagle Cranberry has their own app on the App Store.
Do they?
Yes.
Okay. And then, what was I going to say?
They did, I don't know.
The manager of the hot food section, you know, he knows a fair amount about beer. And the owner, Alan, knows. He's only about our age. I don't know. I don't want to be prejudiced against a young guy who owns a whole grocery store, but it almost seems like it probably was passed down in the family type thing, and he's just running it right now type thing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I was really surprised to see, you know, this Alan Sandonato guy walk up, and he's probably younger than me, you know, so, and he owns the store. Good for him anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, so he was very interested. So like I said, I need to put together an outline of what I think a good training would be, you know, and so maybe there's
I'd be curious to hear about it.
Yeah. I mean, and he's like, what's in it for you? Or what, you know, I'm like, first off, I said, you know, I work cheap. You know, you're not going to get a bill for $1,000 right, or anything like that. And really, there's a big part of it is the altruism, right? I like to see craft beer do well. I want my neighbors to have a good experience in Giant Eagle, you know, like buying beer. And if, you know, it's probably the lowest overhead for him to give me some Giant Eagle gift cards or something like that. I mean, it's a grocery store. That's as good as cash, right? Nice. I mean, Giant Eagle gift cards are as good as cash. And, you know, it's probably easier for him to allocate those. So should be pretty good.
Cool. Let's see.
Oh, so we're drinking the Blindfold IPA from Sierra Nevada. And I've been meaning to talk about this on the air. And I might mention again if I ever think about it on the main show, but since I probably won't, I'm going to mention it here. And that is, we talked about on the show about how black IPAs are black in color, but not roasty in flavor. And, and they use the Carafa 3 malt and all this stuff. And then after the show, I had one of these And then, like, the next day I got an email from someone saying, you haven't had the blindfold, have you? I'm like, I actually had it yesterday. And yeah, what I said was completely wrong. Because there's a definite black IPA flavor in here, right? It's not just an illusion.
Yeah, this has roasted malt in it. This is more than just a gimmick of color. Now, I mean,
Let's call it an illusion of color.
I think it's great that breweries like Sierra Nevada, that the breweries are starting to appreciate the fact that a black IPA can't just be an IPA that has a color, different color. Mm-hmm. I haven't tried enough, so I don't know whether this is true or not. I still don't think that that's the majority of black IPAs.
Yeah, I mean, there's black IPAs. Some people call some of theirs Cascadian dark ales. Yeah.
Really? Yes. Never heard that. Yeah.
I've told it to you before, so you've heard it at least once.
Well, I don't remember here. It was probably after we had a lot of beers.
Yeah, so there's CDA, Cascadian Dark Ale.
Cascadian Dark Ale. It sounds like something from another planet, right?
Sounds like something from Portland.
I think of
something from the Star Trek. Of Jefferson.
You know, in Star Trek, they have Cardassian. Mm-hmm. You know, they have Cardassian Ale or something like that. So it's a Cardassian Dark Ale. It's a Cascadian Dark Ale.
Yeah, I think the name sounds a little too pretentious for me. Mm-hmm. It would be neat to do a survey of black IPAs. I wonder if... Too bad we don't do a show that tastes beers.
No, it's not on our... Not in our wheelhouse,
so, really. So maybe we'll have to kind of try to set up a survey. I mean, not a question-and-answer survey, yeah. But a geographical survey of, you understand what I'm saying, right? A survey of the ecosystem of black IPAs, yeah. And kind of better characterize them.
I still, though, am against doing an all IPA show.
Yeah, I know. But... I didn't say do a show, I said do a survey somehow, right? But I mean, I think we could this isn't super hoppy, yeah. Right? You know, that's another thing I wanted to talk about. So tonight we had two of the beers we did in the show last week, mm-hmm. And we were drinking them much more casually.
Yeah.
And they tasted a lot better.
Yes.
Don't you think? When you're not being super critical.
Well, yeah, I think that's part of the thing is that when we're doing the show, we are analyzing them to the nth degree. We are really putting a microscope to these.
Trying to find something to talk about.
Yeah.
And so we had the Belgian Ale from New Planet because they sent us two bottles of that. And we're just casually drinking it.
Yeah.
And it really...
I noticed it being different,
but it tasted like a wheat beer, or it tasted closest to a wheat beer, like we said last time. And it really wasn't objectionable in any way. It was a little different, but it was fine. It was better than I remember from last week when I was thinking about it.
Yeah.
And the Nitro Chub, same thing. Now, we kind of came to that conclusion last week where we said the Nitro Chub is a good drinker, right? It's just hard to really talk about. Right. But tonight really exemplified it because we were just drinking it and tasted fine, you know?
I think that's maybe something that we should discuss on the main show at some point, that part of the show is really digging in to get people, I mean, and to get people to aware of the things that they mm-hmm. may taste, but at the same time, yeah, you're not likely to analyze beer the same degree that we are, and you're likely to enjoy even the beers that we'd find. I mean, I bet the Rusty Red is okay.
Yeah, I don't think we have two of those. I think we just had one of those, but yeah, you're probably right. I mean, it's just, you just sit back and like, I'm wondering, I'm not saying I want to change our format, but I'm wondering if maybe there's something wrong with the format, right? Where we're not appreciating the drinkability of these beers because we're looking for the complexity. I don't know. I mean, what were we looking for? We're looking for notable things to talk about, right?
Yes.
And if there's nothing notable, the impression that is conveyed across the airwaves is the beer is not as good, you know?
Well, we're diving deep. I mean, we're diving, you know, into the deep end pretty quickly with the beers. So if the beers don't have a lot to show off, then they would tend to be less remarkable. Mm-hmm. And that is bad, although I have, you know, listened to shows where we've said this beer is so drinkable that it beats out the others. But right. normally a more remarkable, more flavorful beer is always going to win. I think that's just that's the general bias that our show has. I don't think that's something we need to change. I think it's just as long as we acknowledge it, then it's fine. You know, that's right. our bias. Our bias is for really interesting, complex beers that have a lot to say.
Too bad we can't preemptively sort the beers into two different categories, right? Analytical beers and drinkers, right? And then we could do if we do a show of all drinkers, it's an even playing field. And then we do a show of all analytical beers, it's an even playing field. You know, too bad we don't know exactly what we're getting.
You know, so it gets into the question, and we talked about this before, but it gets into the question of how we actually do the rankings, because the rankings aren't judged against any theoretical ultimate. When we don't have we don't score them by
points,
or we don't have a grading system. We just rank them against each other.
It's a bracket system, right? I mean, we don't do multiple rounds, mm-hmm. but it's the luck of the draw, who you're competing against.
Yes.
And, you know, and well, that's another thing I was thinking about, you know, because we're getting these donated beers, while I don't want to give up any kind of integrity, I do want to give the beers a fair shake, right? And if we set up a stacked lineup either intentionally or accidentally, I feel bad about not giving the beer a fair shake.
If you ask me, the last show we did was our attempt to not stack it, because what we did is we took the beers that we thought we would enjoy the least, for the most part. Like, we took the Nitro Old Chub, which was a Scotch ale, which I'm not a huge fan of, and we're both not a huge fan of Nitros. And we took the Red Ale, which you're not a huge fan of, and we put those together. We kind of did that automatically. Okay.
I thought the Oso was a brown ale. I thought it was going to pair with the Maui. Mm. So I misread the label. The Oso, maybe that's some feedback for Oso. Their labels are a little hard to follow for some of them.
I knew it was Red Ale.
I missed it. I mean, yeah. So we did a gluten free. We did, you know, a nitro beer.
Yeah.
And we have the prejudice against nitro beers. Prejudice against nitro beers. And a red ale. So, and then a brown ale. So really, I mean, we were trying to set a level playing field.
Yeah.
But if we put, so maybe what I was going towards, if we put more of an effort to do a style show, and granted, we don't want to do an IPA show, but do a style show, then the field appears level, right? Right. So that's kind of the thing I've been thinking about this week is, you know, hopefully with the beers we get in, you know, trying to do that level, since we rank them against each other, you know, instead of against a score, the least we can do is try to level that playing field.
But the other thing to realize, though, is the rankings themselves are more or less a gimmick. They don't mean anything.
It's like one of the very few pieces of information that we put in the show notes.
Yes, it's true. It is true. But I think that the value comes in the review of the beer, not, you know, and what we taste, not in the ultimate ranking. But it's just one of those things. It's like, and believe me that this is not a unique thing, you know, like the AV Club, which I've talked about before, they have a grade ranking. And if you talk to the people who are behind it, they would much rather not have a grade ranking at all and just talk about it. But people want to have a grade ranking. So when they do their grade ranking, they don't have a nebulous other that they grade against. Like I said, they grade against the show itself. So, a Breaking Bad A is not the same as Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. A.
Mm-hmm.
An Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. A is the best that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. could do. A Breaking Bad is the best that Breaking Bad could do. And they try to grade on that level. So you can't draw a comparison between the, you know, an A on that one show is not going to be the same as an A on another show. And you're not going to enjoy the same things about it. And I think that's the best way to do it, combining both the sort of weird need people have for hierarchical rankings.
I mean, we do things on the show, Hard Luck Losers. We say the top three are very close. We do things like that. I'm thinking there might be a disconnect between what we publish audially, orally, and publish in the text format, right? Because a brewery is going to Google and see the text format, right? And that's a much harsher thing. Even, and they might not ever hear to say, oh, it finished fourth place, but it could have finished first or second, you know, that kind of thing, you know, so.
I don't know that there's a good solution to that.
Yeah, I don't
know.
I'd
love to hear if there's someone who has a good solution to that. I don't think that the only solution.
I mean, the solution is to have to rank it on a 100-point scale.
Yeah.
Right? So you can see how close they are. Right. That's the solution. But I don't know if I don't want to do that.
Not only do I don't want to do that, I don't know if I'm capable of doing that, particularly after we had a lot of beers. You know, it's one of those things where...
We could rank them on maybe, I don't know, 10-point scale?
Even then. I don't know.
But, I mean, they would only be relative... So,
after
one
or two beers, it starts to get... You get a message. I don't know if it's something about...
No, it's just a Google Calendar. I mean, so think about this, like a 10-point scale, right? Mm-hmm. It would not necessarily be global of all time 10-point. It would just be kind of a gauge for that show to show that how close, like.
Then what's the difference between doing the rankings?
Because you can see if the fourth beer is close to the first beer or very far away, right? Because you could have a 10, okay. A 10, an 8, and a 7, and a 1, you know, versus a 10, a 1, a 1, and a 1. You
well,
know?
Well, I think that's an interesting idea. The part that the aspect that worries me about that is falling into the game review problem, which is that every game is right. I mean, it's rare that a game gets ranked below a 7, and it's rare that a game gets ranked above a 9, because you're trying to. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, they don't. I mean, you don't see games with 30s or 40s,
right? But they're trying to rank every game across time relative to each other.
No, they're not. I mean, the problem is that the game reviewers are very much beholden to the people who are giving them games.
But we're still, okay. But, I mean, I think the big difference is the game reviewers aren't contrasting four different games, picking their favorite, generally.
True.
So, I mean, I'm just, the reason I'm suggesting ranking the four beers on more than a 4-point scale is to show how close or how far apart they are from each other, right? If you do a 10-point scale, you can see that there's a cluster near the top and they were all good. Mm-hmm. Or if there's two good ones and two bad ones, you know, that kind of thing. That's kind of what I was trying to illustrate textually, because we do that in the audio.
Yes.
But it doesn't make it to text, right?
Right.
It doesn't make it to the show notes. And if we ranked things on a 10-point scale, it would show relative how close it is to the winner.
So my problem would be with that is that a 10-point scale is probably too vast. And probably a 3 or 4-point scale would be all you would really need. Right, because...
Oh, so you want to do stars?
Stars or something like that, because I don't think that it's going to be really rare that we rank something very low. And the most often are going to be middle to high.
Oh, okay. So let's look at the last show. Let's see if we can remember the beers, okay. Right?
So there was the red, which I would have called a 3 or a 2.
Yeah, to be honest. On the same place, 3 or 2.
Then there was the New Planet, which I would probably give a 5 just for effort.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you.
Then there's the old Chubb. I'd give it a 7.
So I could do a 7, maybe a 6, somewhere in there.
Right. Then there was the sparkling ale, mm-hmm. which I would give an 8. And you would...
That was my favorite.
That was your favorite.
I would give it an 8 or a 9. And then I would put
Lahaina,
the...
Lahaina, which I would give a 9.
I would give the Lahaina underneath the sparkling, so 7 or something like that. So that's where I would have put it, right? That's... I have to write it down to see where what the separations were there on those.
Well, it went from 2 to 9.
Yeah. So, I mean, but we had a 2, a 5.
2, a 5, a 6, or a 7.
Yeah, 6, six and a half.
Yeah.
And an 8 and a 9.
Yeah.
I don't know. 1 through 5 was kind of like that, isn't it?
I mean, how does that solve the? How does that solve any problem about the brewers that who are donating to us beer? I mean, we're still giving one of their beers a 2.
Well, right, right. Now, I'm not trying to make the Oso beer appear better. I'm more so trying to make the new Planet, which came in 4th place. You know, it's.
It only came in 4th place, but the thing with New Planet is it only came in 4th place because we gave it some leeway because of what it's made of.
Yeah, I mean, there's gaps in this show, but I mean, there's other shows.
But I mean, if you look at that show, mm-hmm. the rankings themselves look fine. There's no need for the numbers.
Right. There's other shows where there might be a 9, a 9, an 8. A 3.
Right.
You know? And
there's other, there's some shows where that would might be nines all across, or, you know, a 10, 10, 9, 9, 9. And so I don't know. It's another layer that mm-hmm. I don't know if it's needed. I think it's interesting. I would like to hear if anybody, you know, has any, thinks that would be worthwhile. I'm not sure it's worthwhile
to add that. I mean, the main reason I don't want to assign point scores is because people are going to try to compare points from different shows.
Right.
And I don't want to try to be consistent across multiple shows like that, right?
Show is the show, and the ranking is based.
Because if we wanted to be consistent across shows, we would be judging the beers against the BJCP score sheet or, you know, the NHC score sheet or something like that. Mm-hmm. Or the, I mean, not NHC, but, you know, World Beer Cup score sheet or something like that.
Yes. And that's not the show we do.
It would take too long. And, yeah, it just wouldn't. Yeah. So, I mean, that's the problem with the numbers. I was just trying to, like, we very often in the audio say, you know, this last beer is good, but it's in last place because mm-hmm. the other beers are great. Hard luck loser. Or, you know, the top three are really tight, you know, and the show notes don't convey that.
What's interesting is that we originally, when we started the show, did not put the rankings in the show notes. And we had an email, somebody mm-hmm. asking for us to put the rankings in the show notes. We've done it ever since then.
Yeah.
So maybe the question is, do we put the rankings in the show notes?
It's a useful piece of data to have in there. I've gone back to help me remember the beers. You know, not just the number, but, you know, when you see the rankings, it helps jog your memory of what you were talking about, right? So, I mean, that's...
But that's for us. Does that same thing apply to listeners? Do they remember what we were talking about?
I think it's still a good piece of information for listeners, even if they're using it a little more cut and dry, right? If they're using it a little more.
The other thing is that the rankings are not as immediately available as they were before when we had the old site. You have mm-hmm. to go to the RSS to actually look at it.
If you're looking at an iTunes, you'll be able to see them pretty clearly. Or if you have the show on your iPhone, you'll be able to see them.
Let me see
here. You should be able to see them. Should be the notes there.
I'm going to check to make sure that's true.
Did you see the, I never had got around to watching any of those Alton Brown YouTube shows that he just started because he always puts a fucking post-it note up and not a link to the fucking YouTube show. And,
it's in there.
Yeah. So he just did one on sabering champagne. You know, do you know what that is?
When you use a sword.
To cut the top off. Yeah. So, makes me want to try it with a bottle of beer. Knock the top off.
I think you got to be really good to
get I don't think so. I mean, the way Alton's technique, now granted he did have a real saber, but he did say he's seen it done with a lawnmower blade. You know, but why would you want to use something as hard to find as a lawnmower blade when you have a saber laying around, right?
Yeah.
It was a pretty funny show. It was not like 3 minutes or whatnot, but it was well done. It was a little bit of Good Eats. It was a little bit of, you know, Elton being.
Well, I guess it's about two things, right? It's about the relative thickness of what you're hitting it with and the angle.
Yeah. So, right? I mean, what he said was you want to use French champagne because the glass is thicker. And then you find the bottle seam. So there's a seam right there. You hold that up. And you hold it like this with your thumb and the punt. And you just kind of slide the sword just along the neck of the bottle. And you want to swing through it like a golf swing, he says. So you just keep going, right? And you just go, pa-ting! And it just pops off. Hmm. Never realized there was bottle seams.
Never really looked. I mean, I guess I realized it, but I never really, you know, it makes sense.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, so you hold like that and you just go ting, and you go, and it's very rough around there, but there shouldn't be any shards of glass, and sure looks cool.
It's one of those things that looks cool, but that's all it's good for. It's like flambés, right? I mean, mm-hmm. They look cool, but do they really add any flavor? Not really.
Yeah, but I want to sober a saber, a bottle of beer, damn it. Saber a can of beer.
If we can saber a saver beer?
Nice.
Mm-hmm. So we get the whatever the collaboration beer is, and we savor that.
It's a lot of work, right? Because you take the foil off, you take the cage off.
Yes.
And he also had put the bottle upside down in a ice bath for 10 minutes because apparently that making the glass that much colder helps.
That so. Makes sense. Makes it more brittle. Sure. Yeah.
So it's a lot of work to savor the beer. Sure, it's freaking awesome. It's almost like shooting the bottle cap off a beer. Yeah. That'd be the
and
next
one.
And
is it worth it? Because, I mean, champagne is a different drink than beer, and I don't know. It's is the glass thick enough on beer bottles? If it says use champagne beer glasses, because...
I mean, some of the bottle-conditioned ones are probably good. It's worth the try, but... Yeah, might fail miserably. Yeah, so he had a new YouTube channel. Like, I'll check that out sometime. But he just freaking posted another picture of a post-it note. There's nothing to click, so I won't do it now. And then I saw the next one. I was like, fuck him. Yeah. I'm not going to do that now. He's not going to give me a fucking link. And then so I finally looked at the one today because Chris Hardwick retweeted it with the link. So I'm like, thank you, Chris.
Is it part of the Nerdist thing? It's probably a Nerdist.
It's just out on YouTube. It didn't have the Nerdist.
I know his podcast is part of the Nerdist thing.
So. The icon, you know, the little YouTube icon for the user was not a Nerdist icon. It was an Alton Brown icon. So, but I don't know beyond that.
Let's see. There is questions as to whether Community will be renewed or not.
Aww.
Right now...
Aww.
Right now... it was supposed to be announced today, and there was lots of negative things saying that it doesn't look good. But the fact that it wasn't announced today, to me, means that there's probably some negotiations going on in the back room, Sony paying NBC to get this thing. So it may happen, but I would say that the odds are against it right now. So likely a meteor did hit Greendale and everyone's dead. That's okay. I'm going to miss the show. But this last season would have been the last season anyway. And Dan Harmon will make other stuff.
Right.
So I'm not worried about that. Other things, any other shows that you are enjoying? Because I'll tell you whether they were renewed or not.
Oh, I don't know. Orphan Black. I'm watching, that was getting, shit's getting real.
Shit's getting real.
Shit's getting real in Orphan Black. Game of Thrones this week. Not quite as crazy as previous weeks. So almost a slow week compared.
It's kind of a table setting show right now.
I keep waiting for them. Like, they keep showing Winterfell in the opening credits, and they show Bran, but they never go to Winterfell. You know,
no, it's weird. Winterfell in the books doesn't even show up until the fifth book, really. Mm, okay. So there's not much going on in Winterfell for three books.
Yeah, they haven't even shown it, you know, forever. I guess Greyjoy's there, huh? Or no?
No, he's in Dreadfort.
That's right, he's in Dreadfort. Yeah. So like I'm just curious. Like, I just want like 5 minutes of what's going on at Winterfell. Now that the Starks are gone, and you know, stuff like that. So.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of shit going on in the North, and they only show the Wall for the North. And mm-hmm. Yeah, I really think they should take. I mean, I think that part of it is that Winterfell is part of the credits, and they have that tree thing, mm-hmm. and they don't want to take that out.
Mm.
But I mean, like the last few, like they didn't show the Eyrie on last week's episode in the opening credits, and the Eyrie was played a pretty big part.
Yeah, I mean, for the first couple of seasons, right, I always skip past this. You're like, oh no, you have to watch that. It gives you a plot line. I'm like, and
it
then
gives you an idea of where the
thing is. I'm watching it this season. I'm like, I think they're getting lazy, is what I was thinking. It seems like
it hasn't changed at all. Where, this entire season, I think it's gone to, it goes to King's Landing, it goes to then Dragonstone, which is. Really, there hasn't been much going on in Dragonstone. There's one, I think only one episode that Stannis is in. Then it goes to Dreadfort, and there's really only one episode where, where the whole Bolton thing is going on. Then it goes to Winterfell, nothing's going on. Goes to the mm-hmm. Wall, of course, there's stuff going on at the Wall. And then it goes to Meereen.
That's one way off in the east?
Yeah.
Or what, I guess they say east, but it goes west.
It goes west, but it's to the east. Yeah, cause it's a globe, so you know you can go either way. But it's on the most of what we see is on Westeros, mm-hmm. and that's Estos, the eastern
part. Okay.
So what's interesting is that next week apparently there's going to be some stuff in Braavos.
Okay.
Which plays a part in later. In later plot points, so I would expect that Braavos would be shown. They showed the Eyrie in season one, so I think they might jump back to the Eyrie if there's more Littlefinger stuff. Good Littlefinger reveals this week. Mm-hmm.
You can never. I mean, it's part of the character, right? But like, oh, what poor Sansa. I mean, pretty much it's revealed she's going to be stuck there and she's going to have to marry Peter or whatever his name is, right?
Was it Robert? What's his name? I even forget his name. I think it was Robert or something like that. The little kid.
Mm-hmm. Poor Sansa.
There's some stuff going on, not now, but there will be stuff going on at Dorne in the later seasons, and that's south.
Okay.
Of King's Landing. So, yeah, I don't know. The books never really, as far as I remember, they never really get to Casterly Rock, which is over in the mm-hmm. western side of Westeros. But there may be some jumping around other locations if they decide to do it.
Right. Yeah. It's... I was thinking about this the other day, the, you know, special effects that they're able to do on a weekly show, you know, like every, you know, like they have all these grand scenes of cities and, you know, cityscapes and walking up on the walls. And it's like, they could have never produced this show 5 years ago.
No, it's true. And when you look at, when you look at those special effects reels and they show you how it's mm-hmm. done, and then basically, you know, two people are walking this bunch of green screen and then mm-hmm. everything else is just pushed on. It's like, mm-hmm. wow, it's pretty amazing that it's so seamless now.
Yeah, it looks pretty real. Yeah, it looks so real. I mean, every once in a while you can kind of see that there's kind of a green
screen.
The one
that I thought was really fake looking was Dany on the Pyramid of Meereen when she had covered the harpy with mm-hmm. the flag,
yeah.
and they zoomed out. It was like, okay, that's like a 1992 video game. That's what that looked like. It was not very good. But then you understood, because then they had all the White Walker stuff that they had to animate. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of like they were under pressure.
Right. Well, it's nice to see that the White Walkers don't sacrifice the babies or anything like that. So
yeah, and like you may have heard, that was something that was not in the books.
Oh, okay.
That was something that even book readers are like, whoa! So this, it was one of the first times in the show that book readers were
okay
surprised. Book readers were in the same boat as everybody else. Whoa! So that was pretty cool. Some book readers are really annoyed. I loved it. I thought it was great. Mm-hmm. I want more of that shit.
What the book readers want the White Walkers to eat the babies or something?
No, the book readers just didn't. The book readers just want. It's not that. It's that the book readers want the show to not get ahead of the books, to not reveal anything, and they want the books to be so forth. And it's like, come on! I mean, book readers have been holding over show watchers. All this stuff they knew was going to happen, the Red Wedding, Ned dying, all this other stuff they knew was going to happen, and just waiting for the reactions. And now the tables have turned slightly. And the book reader's like, no, I don't want that. It's like, come on, fuck you. You deserve it.
Right. Cool.
That's kind of all I got.
All right. Oh, it's midnight. Yeah. It's about time to wrap this up. Good post show.
Good post show for no show. Post show for no show, but we'll be back after Saver for possibly a wrap up, if not just a regular old show.
Do you want to record it real quick? We're going to Saver bumper and put it up?
Sure.
Okay, we'll do that next.
Do you want to put it up, though? I mean, I don't know, because we just put up the last show.
In a couple days. I don't know. If you don't want to put it up, we won't.
Yeah, I don't think it's necessary. Right. We'll put it on our Twitter feed.
Okay.